Coming up next, Dr. John Deloney joins me as we talk about how your job, your work, is affecting your relationships. And then we'll break down which jobs have the highest and lowest divorce rates. And we take your calls, and it all starts right now. All right, folks, welcome to the Ken Coleman Show, where we help you win at work and in life. If things just aren't great or things are on fire in your work, it's affecting your life, and the converse is true. If things are on fire in your life, it's going to affect your job performance, and we want you to make more money and experience more meaning. That's the whole goal here of the show. Thrilled to have you with us. Also thrilled to have my colleague, Dr. John Deloney, who is host of the Dr. John Deloney Show, in this very studio, and so we just switch everything out every day.
I love it, man.
Welcome, pal.
I know, it's like being in your house, but somebody else's drapes and books and... This is awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to talk a little bit later in the program about his new book, which is on pre-order right now, Own Your Past, Change Your Future. It's very relevant to what we talk about here on the show. But we're going to start today, as we always do, diving into real life. Three specific ways, or we could say three areas, John, where a job, a career, otherwise known as just your work, can absolutely... not just stress out your relationships, but can be a part of.
Yeah, can burn them to the ground.
Because we're involved, but it can burn everything to the ground. And so let's just break down these areas. The first one, let's just talk about work-related stress that then becomes burnout. There could be a whole host of issues that cause burnout and stress at work. Could be toxic coworkers, could be a toxic leader, could be the fact that you're just... you know, swimming the moment you get in the parking lot. As we see a lot of people going through still post-pandemic, where people have left and there's no replacement. And all of a sudden, they feel like, John, they're catching plates every day when they walk in. And you just do that about 3 or 4 days in a row. And all of a sudden, it can be a crushing blow. Inappropriate relationships. And then how about being vacant at home? Because all you focus on is work. We call that workaholism. Let's take up the first one on work-related stress and burnout. John, how does this affect us at home?
I think it's when our work becomes our primary way of capturing identity, of capturing worth, capturing esteem, for lack of better terms. When instead of our families, our spouses, our kids, our character, our spiritual life, instead of those things getting our first fruits, if you will, if our work gets everything, and then whatever we have left, we then give here, right? And I think we've got that out of order, and over time, our families, our communities, our whatever other obligations we have, they just die on the vine, man, because we're not sending any nutrients that way, because we are completely burning both ends at the office. Mm.
And there's something here that we're talking about when a person gets to that place. Is it intentional? Is it unintentional in that they're going, okay, I've got to win at work or it's going to affect everything else. And what we fail to realize is that if we put all of our focus, all of our energy in just trying to survive at work, everything's dying quicker at home. Is that unintentional? Intentional.
I think for most of us, we're just following the script we've been given since we were children, right? You and I have talked about this a lot.
Yeah, you got to be a good student, which becomes, I got to be a good worker.
Right. Well, you have to, if you don't get that grade in first grade.
Yeah.
It's over for you.
You get
your
held
life's
back.
Over.
You're
You're a loser at the age of 7, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And then that goes to high school, and if you don't get in this math class, you're not going to get into that math class.
Right.
And then it goes to the college, and then it gets to work. So we have a script that says your achievement will tell you who you are, right? And we have this myth that is when you get to this certain place and make this certain money, get this certain title, then everything will be okay. And that's completely false. That's nonsense. And then the other one is we are often better. We train for our jobs for 10, 20, 30 years, nobody teaches us how to do relationships. We just do it like mom and dad did. So often we find that we're better at our work, our job, than we are at being a husband or being a wife or being a parent. And so it's natural to lean that way. So to answer your question, no, I think very few people set out to fry themselves.
Right.
And if they do, they're morons, right? Most people just are doing the path laid out in front of us, and we realize, oh, you can't achieve your way to being worthy, or you can't achieve your way to being loved. You can't make enough money for your wife to go, that's cool that you're cheating on me, or that's cool that you're never home. Thanks for that. You can't earn that, right?
Yeah. All right. So let's. I want to go through these three major areas, and there's a lot here. Let's go back to work related stress and burnout. So the way we see this coming out is we got people going, "Hey, expectations of me, I can't keep up with them. There's too much. I'm in a new job. Maybe my training didn't work. I'm trying to keep up. Burnout." Manifests itself in so many different ways. Let's talk about that. If they're in a job, people that are watching and that are listening, and there's a high amount of stress, or they're experiencing high levels of burnout, they're taking that home with them. What does that look like? I want people to be able to identify, I know I've got stress. I know I'm feeling burned out, but how is that manifesting itself when they get home?
Oh, like what does that look like?
Yeah, that's what we want to talk about.
If you find yourself raged out at a Little League T-ball game, that you're probably fried. You're cooked.
It's not just a bad call.
It's absolutely stone irrational.
It could be a bad call, but you shouldn't.
If you're at a dance
anybody.
Recital and you think, I bet I can find that judge in the parking lot, that's on you, right?
Yeah,
if you
sure.
find yourself driving home and somebody gets in front of you a little too close in the lane ahead of you, and the words just fly, and you think, I'm going to keep following them, or I've got a gun in my car, I bet I could hit him on the road. If you drive into your driveway and you see your 5-year-old daughter's little trike, and you told her to move it and she didn't, and you become enraged. The big one that I've seen over the last few years is the violence of silence, I call it. You go home and you just don't want to talk to anybody. I just want my phone. I want to grab the beer. And I want my everybody, y'all leave me alone. I've been busy all day. Man, that's signs that you're burned out. If you're eating too much, one more drink, one more going back to get some more ice cream, just living in screens because you can't face the real world, right? It's when you become increasingly disassociated from your world, man. Those are some signs, dude. When you say the words, if they would just, that's the big one. If you say the words, if my wife would just clean this house up, or if my husband would just, if the president would just, that's a sign that your body is cooked, right? And that you're overrun and you're not being able to control the things you control. You can't handle reality. That's a sign when you need to slow things down. It's not everybody else's fault at that point. You need to look in the mirror.
Yeah. And then, you know, we talk about being vacant as one of the three major areas, but workaholics. I believe, John, that not all the time, but I do believe there's some pain that may be relational that drives people to stay at work too long, and it becomes a convenient excuse for avoiding, just as you said, avoiding stuff. We avoid stuff at home by staying at work all the time.
Workaholism's an ism, right? It's like alcoholism. And nobody on paper would say, do you love this whiskey more than your wife, than your husband? No one would say, no, of course not. But where do I spend my time?
Yeah.
What thing covers up that hurt, right? And work does that for most of us. In grad school, we talked about whatever ism you happen to have generally depends on where you were born, right? So in the United States, if you work 90 hours a week, and you don't drink, we give you $1 million and say, way to go, right? If you do that I'm just making up a country here, but let's say you go to Spain and you work 90 hours a week, people look at you and say, you're crazy. What are you doing, right? Take some time, right? Have a drink, brother. Yeah. And so just depending on where you live, but in our culture, man, if you work 120 hours a week, we all pat you on the back. It's a drug. It's really an avoidant drug.
It really is. And, you know, if you think about it, we go to parties and places like this, folks. Find yourself. Ask yourself how many times you just talk about how busy you are as though it's a badge of
honor. So you're winning,
right? Yeah. All
right.
So here's the deal. Coming up next, Dr. John Delaney stays with us. We're going to take on this third issue, and that is seeking relational issues at work. All right, folks, welcome back to the Ken Coleman Show, helping you win at work and in life. And to that end, we got to talk about you, the entire person. You're not just a professional. You're actually a person who does professional things. And my colleague, Ramsey Personality, Dr. John Delaney, soon to be number one best-selling author, I believe his new book. We'll talk a little bit more about what's in there and how that can help you win personally so you can win professionally. That book is entitled Own Your Past, Change Your Future. More on that a little bit later. All right, we've been talking about three ways that issues at your job, in your work life, can destroy your personal life. We talked a little bit about, obviously, burnout and stress. Everybody understands that. Then we talked about this idea of being vacant at home. because you're all the time at work. That's that workaholic type syndrome and behavior that we're all familiar with. But now here's one that's a little sticky. This one's not fun, but I think it's something we got to be very careful about. And that is when maybe toxicity at work or a lack of meaning at work, it's just a J-O-B. You're bored out of your mind. You aren't tying your values to a contribution at work, and you're bored and you start looking for distractions. Uh-oh. And all of a sudden, maybe stuff going on in your work life is causing garbage at home, and you got tension between you and your wife or between you and your husband. And yet there's somebody who's got that silver tongue, that unbelievable way of connecting with you at the office. John, I see this happen all the time. We got to be careful.
Yeah.
Where we spend more time at work than we do at home.
Yep.
And then there's somebody that seems to understand me. I mean, or whatever
right,
it is.
Right.
I mean, what's the slippery slope here? What are some warning signs? What do we have to be careful of so that we don't blow up our personal life because somebody seems to get us a little bit more
so
at the office?
Just speaking directly, you're talking about you and that person sitting next to you, y'all share the inside jokes.
Next thing you know, it
becomes
affair.
Next thing it's like, my husband really screwed this up.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, that guy's an idiot.
Yeah.
Or I would never do that at my house. And
dangerous.
Suddenly, yeah, let's go to grab lunch. And then, hey, we're all going to grab drinks. So suddenly that becomes your go-to person.
That's right.
Right? This one's hard. This one's hard because on the one hand, it's easy to say, never do coffee with someone you might be attracted to. Never do, don't ever go to lunch. And man, that sort of scorched earth makes a lot of sense. It's protective. And I've also been in situations where, man, if only this group of people is going to lunch, then this woman can, it always gets edged out because we do a lot of business at lunch, right? Or if we never, so it's just a messy, messy thing that you got to be careful of. Here's what I believe most people run into when it comes to having affairs, starting affairs, whether it's you go all the way and have physical affairs, you leave your family, or they're emotional affairs where you start leaning into somebody else more than your spouse at home or more than your boyfriend or girlfriend that you've been with forever. Here's where I think it gets messy. Esther Perel says that most people have affairs not because of something wrong with their partner, but because they are bored. They are out of,
not
they
surprised.
Don't like who they have become.
Yes.
And the word she says of all the people she's met with, the word that always comes up is, this person made me feel alive again.
Yes.
Right?
Excitement.
Yeah. Some sort, I was dead in my dead-eyed job and I was going home in a routine at home and I'd stopped having hard conversations. And so if you feel that your day has become a routine, if you have unspoken conversations at home that you think is going to cause problems, if you are disconnected from your kids, from your spouse, whatever, please lean into those.
Yeah.
Have the hard conversations. Because here's the deal. You will have hard conversations. They're just mayor. You get to decide whether a lawyer's present or not,
that's
right?
That's exactly right.
So when you find yourself unplugging from life, I love how you started this. When you feel like I don't have a purpose.
Yeah.
That's a sign that you are treading water.
Yeah.
And when you tread water, you start to grab the first life draft that comes along.
That's
right?
Exactly right.
And so, man, I don't know anybody hasn't been there that hasn't been at that, I just feel kind of dead and purposeless and what am I doing?
Oh, yeah.
That's the big warning sign.
And let me say something to the audience here because I make no bones about this. I do believe that if you are experiencing tremendous meaning in your work, it makes a part of you, not all of you, but it makes a part of you whole. And I do believe it can help you in other areas.
Absolutely.
However, let me just say this. I don't want that to be confused with if I'm on fire in my work, meaning I'm really talented at it, I really love doing it, and it's producing a result that I connect to, my values, my personal belief system. That doesn't mean that you're not going to have relationship issues. You will. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you, it can keep you tremendously grounded to where you don't become distracted.
Right. And I think you and I have talked about this, maybe even on this show in the past, but there was a study, remember the Holly Madison account that it was the account for married people to have married affairs with other married people, right?
Yeah.
Well, some social scientists pulled this apart. I think this is 2017, 2016. They pulled it apart and found accounts that were verified true and they connected them to actual credit card numbers. So they were true. And then they did something that was ingenious. They went and looked at major companies in the U.S., and to find leadership in those companies to see if there's any connection. And this was the big drum roll. I was driving to work and I remember going, is this where we're at as a country? They said big landmark finding. Those companies that had leaders that were in this, they were more likely to cheat on their spouse. They were cheating on their spouse. Were more likely to have ethical issues, to have business issues, to have company issues. And so we have a culture that had said for years, I don't care who you are outside of this office. If you show up and play, then we're going to give you all the money and you be who you're going to be.
Right. No connection.
There's no connection. Right. Now I think we can all safely say who you are out there becomes who you are here.
I mean,
and vice versa, right?
Absolutely. I think that's a great point. You know, you can't, if you're going to wink, wink on your vows, you'll wink, wink on your taxes. You'll wink, wink on your profit reports. Right. So you'll wink, wink on how we're going to pay people. I mean, there's just no stopping.
But here's the beauty. It works in the other way.
Yes,
here's what I found. There's seasons when I don't feel like I can even speak to my wife. I'm so mad or I'm tired or I'm grumpy or whatever. I can practice making sure everybody I see at work knows that I value them. I ask about their kids, their family. How are things going? What's going on? And that works the other way too. And then I get home and I realize, man, my wife's an incredible, brilliant woman who's working hard, dealing with crazies and this and that. And it rehumanizes me the other way too. So it can work one way, right? If you're a jerk at home, it's going to find its way into the office.
Yeah.
But if you will spend time honoring people at work, it will loop back and you'll begin to honor the people in your home too.
Yeah. And so here's what I want the takeaway to be. The reason why John's here today, and he's not just here because of his new book, he's going to be on, you know, consistently, because here's what I want people to understand. It doesn't make you less of a professional to admit, to then go do something about your weaknesses personally, whether it be relationship, maybe you got a kid. Sorry. That is not, I think even more so in 2022, I just think there's much more mercy and grace in corporate America. I just do. I don't use those words as religious words.
Right.
I really sense that. I think it's okay more so than ever to go, hey, I know I'm doing really great over here professionally. It seems like everything's doing great. My personal life's falling apart. I need help.
Here's an important.
You agree with that?
Oh, 1,000%. And here's an important line for business leaders, business owners who are listening to this. One of the watershed moments for me in the interview process with Dave was, this is just a one-on-one conversation Dave Ramsey and I were having. And he said, you will not use the name Dave Ramsey as an excuse to not be a present husband and a present father.
Right.
And he said, I can make a whole bunch of money off you in 2 years, then we're going to hate each other, and then you're going to move on, and then I'm going to lose and have to start over. The long-term play here is you go home and be with your family.
Yep.
Be well so that you can show up here and be all guns a-blazing.
Yeah.
And I think that is a masterful piece of leadership wisdom advice. Let your people go home and be with their kids. If their kid's in a hospital, let them go.
Yep.
And if they're an hourly worker, give them a few days to go be with their families, man. Go take care of your marriage. An hour an afternoon to go to marriage counseling is going to save your company money in the long run, right? Not to mention it's the right thing to do.
Yeah. Well, and listen to me, leaders. What Dr. John Deloney's saying is not a helpful suggestion. I got to tell you, it's a mandate in 2022. People will leave you so fast,
Head
will spin.
They'll leave.
So either you start to care about people or they're going to leave you. We've got nearly 20 million people have left jobs since August of 2021, and a big part of it is what they're calling life balance, but I would call it personal values. They want to be valued, and the great arms race for talent is on. And if you don't start to focus on real benefits, meaning training your people professionally, but also if you got to send them to a parenting conference on your dime, do it.
It's going to pay off for you in the long run.
It's going to pay off. All right. Coming up next, Dr. John Deloney and I are going to go in the news. What are the jobs with the highest and lowest divorce rates? We'll tell you and then break it down. That's next. Don't move. Hey, folks, helping you win at work and in life. This is the Ken Coleman Show. I'm Ken, joined by my pal, Dr. John Deloney. Going to get to your calls in a little bit, and we're going to break down a very interesting study on jobs and divorce rate. But first, this is the time to make your move. The hottest job market in the history of our country, and I don't see it slowing down anytime soon. So you need to be hanging out with my friends at ZipRecruiter. In fact, there's a lot of buzz about Phil. I don't know if you've heard this. We've been talking about Phil. I want to be Phil. Like, everybody's thanking Phil. In fact, I saw this ad in Times Square. Thank you, Phil. So who is Phil and what are people saying? Well, Phil is with ZipRecruiter, and Anthony P. said, Phil sent me jobs that I was a great match for, so I knew something good was going to happen, and it did. That, Phil, is somebody you want in your corner as well, especially for an easier job search. What will Phil help you discover? Find out now, ZipRecruiter.com. ZipRecruiter.com. All right, let's break it down. A very interesting study on specific jobs and industries and divorce rates. Let's break it down in the news. All right. By the way, we were in a little bit of rehearsal prior, and Dr. D heard the bump
it's
there.
So good.
And he took him back to the old days when we watched Peter Jennings and Tom Brokaw and Dan Rather, the big three. So it occurs to me maybe I need a mustache. I need a Ron Burgundy level mustache.
Or a big red velvet suit.
Slap yes. on just for this segment yes. and tear it off as we go forward. Okay, here is the headline. Monster.com is the source, the headline. These jobs have the highest and lowest divorce rates, right? Set you up here, Doc. You ready for this? The CDC, they get involved in this type of data as well, which I find interesting. Sickness of the soul. I like
it
that.
It kills us.
It does kill us.
Yes, literally.
The American divorce rate right now, you may know this, is 2.9% per 1,000 people. So it's at a historical lows. Mm-hmm. But that's the rate. Now, the figure varies, of course, when you put in race, age, education level, and the research is showing what kind of job you have. So that can change it, but that's the average, 2.9% per 1,000 people. Okay, so here we go, John. I thought this would be
very interesting. So these are new. I haven't seen these yet.
This is new. He's not seen this.
I'm excited to see this.
He didn't want to know, and we're just going to break this down. All right, so now these are the jobs with the lowest divorce rate. And when we say jobs, we're talking about a job title here. And so the number one on the lowest divorce rate. So this would be the most marriage-friendly job, according to the data. I don't know if we can call it that, but here we go. Actuaries. Now, I had to look this up because I...
Not surprising.
I had to. I tend to be a guy who knows his words, but I was like, I think I know what that means. But I went and dove in. And these are basically people who measure...
Risk management. Right.
So do you see a tie here?
Yes.
You think these people are assessing their mates?
This is going to be super fun. We can just generalize everybody. Yeah, this is somebody that has looked at somebody and thought, I'm going to get married. I'm going to pull up my spreadsheets and create the worst possible situation and work backwards. I think we're good.
Yeah,
I can see that.
But it's like they're taking on personality type. Maybe they're taking on their career that they were that's mate, potential
and
mate.
And again, I've got no data to back this
up. No, we
up,
don't.
Well, if I got a friend who's an actuary, my guess would be
all right.
They're the least likely to drive their motorcycle too fast or drink too much or to cheat on, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That they're a stable human being.
So let's, a little fun word exercise. If you could only pick one word to describe a successful actuary, how their brain's working professionally only, what word would you
stability.
Pick?
Stability.
Okay, stability. All right, so hold on to that word.
Okay.
Because I think there's a pattern here.
Okay.
Number two. Now, 17% is the divorce rate.
Okay.
Among actuaries. Very low.
Yep.
Okay, next on the list at 18.9%, physical scientists. Stay with me. Number three on the list, medical scientist and life scientist. You're talking about 18.9% for physical science, 19.6% for medical science. So I'll stop there. There's a hula hoop in my mind.
Yeah.
Do you agree? As a man who studies the brain, there's a hula hoop those three different types of work.
The science
what
researchers I knew were very methodical, just as people, and they follow a process every day, and they check in and check out, and there's seasons of stress and seasons of not stress, but... Yeah, it's a consistency. It's a stability.
Right? I think so, too.
Hmm.
They crave process.
Right. And they revere process.
They revere it. And let's be honest, I'm not trying to take the romance out of marriage, but if I sometimes were better at the actual process.
Come on, dude.
I would be probably have more opportunity for romance.
I think my
guys,
wife.
Take the garbage out.
If she was here, she'd be like, yeah, you're a hurricane. You're like being married to a taser, Deloney.
Right.
Yes.
And if you look at the actuaries, the scientists. Pretty stable.
Yeah. Just as humans.
Just as humans. All right.
Allegedly.
Next is clergy. You know, kind of upset they're not number one.
Well, they're not allowed
19
to.
Point, I know. That's what I'm saying. But then number five, rounding out the top five, software developers. 20.3%. Now, a quick scan at 6 through 10. Physical therapist, 6. Optometrist, 7. Chemical engineers, 8. Religious and education directors, 9, and then physicians and surgeons, 10. Of the top 10, I was surprised by that, given the nature of the stress, the hours. But again, I see a theme here outside of the clergy. Everything seems to be very science-driven, medical-driven.
Yep, process-driven.
Science and medical.
Yeah, yeah.
Very interesting.
Very matter-of-fact. And another thing is, you have to have hard conversations when you're in those jobs.
Yeah.
Right? If you do this, you will die.
That's a very good
point.
That's
part of it. So maybe they're more equipped to have hard conversations at home, too.
All right, now. Jobs with the highest divorce rate. Now that we've kind of got you engaged.
This will be fun.
The chat room can jump in as well. If the chat room wants to make some predictions, we'll see what you got here. What would you say, if you were to take a blind guess, the job title with the highest divorce rate?
Radio personality for sure.
No, thankfully. Gaming manager. 52.9% of gaming managers.
Casino.
Casinos. Yeah.
Could see that.
Yeah, you could see that. Bartenders.
Could see that.
Now, number two.
I think there's, initially, my first thought would be, yeah, well, there's people everywhere throwing themselves at you. But I would, my first guess on those two jobs would be the hours.
That's what I think.
You're not at home. You work in the middle of the night, and it's hard to have a life
right.
with you.
Because number three backs us up, flight attendants.
There you go.
Gaming service workers, four. So we've got a theme here with the gaming hours. This is funny. I had to look this up. Rolling machine setters, operators, and tenders. These are people that actually set those gigantic construction machines that are paving highways. You know, the big giant cylinder wheels. Yep. I know how to call it. Very interesting. Huh. So a lot of stress there. Telemarketers, eight. I got to tell you, I think they're bored out of their mind.
And they work late hours.
We talked about this our last segment.
Purposeless, yeah.
No meaning.
Yeah.
I'm not knocking telemarketers.
No, I mean, you got to make your money. That's right.
But baby, you want to talk about hedgehog focus.
Man.
Smiling and dialing. It ain't a whole lot of smiling.
Yeah.
So very interesting. Industries that rank lowest to highest. Architectures and engineers, the lowest, 27.5%. Computers and mathematics, again.
Process.
Mm. Military, 28.3%. So the very high ones, oh boy, protective services.
Mm-hmm.
That's your legal, firemen, all
super
that kind of
high
stuff.
Stress.
High in the transportation areas and office and administrative support. Mm. Very interesting findings there.
Man.
Very interesting.
So what do we do with that? When I hear that, here's what I think. I immediately think everybody, regardless of what job you have, should have some relational skills, like having hard conversations, like letting your needs be heard and met, having enough confidence to say, I don't like it when this happens. Could we start doing that? Right. Yeah. To be able to practice those hard conversations.
Yeah. I think one big takeaway is we saw some natural discipline and wiring in process people that make the disciplines and the priorities of marriage maybe a little bit easier, if I can make that conclusion.
Yeah.
Not making excuses for people who aren't wired that way.
But look at marriage as a skill set to be learned.
That's exactly right.
As a process to follow.
Yeah.
Instead of just like an adventure to have.
Yeah, there's some discipline there that I think us party kind of off the seat of our pants people could pay attention to.
That's right.
I think the second big takeaway is that there's no question that the work environment and the hours and the absence of being away from family, that there's no defeating that. That's going to win every time.
That's right. And
so you got to figure that part out.
Yeah, and I learned this the hard way this fall, and just seeing you this weekend was wise. Like this fall, man, I hit the road, and I was all over the place all by myself.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought that the paychecks would override my absence.
Never does.
And my wife said, hey,
never does.
The house misses you. Yeah. And then I saw you this weekend. You had a great event. You're going to help some folks, and Stacey went with you, right?
It's always
your
the
wife
best.
Went with you. And what a great way to double dip on that, right?
It's incredible.
So, yeah, stay connected to your family when it comes to time. There's no trading for presents.
He is Dr. John Deloney. He's my guest. Don't go anywhere. When we come back, how do you own your past so you can change your future? We'll talk about that, and we take your calls. Don't move. This is The Ken Coleman Show. Helping you make more money and experience more meaning. This is The Ken Coleman Show. I've got my colleague, best-selling author of the new book that's available for pre-order right now, Dr. John Deloney. That book is Own Your Past, Change Your Future. Real quick, I got to reach out to Kennedy Ivy, who's in the chat room on YouTube. She says, is this actually live or pre-recorded? This is live, baby. Would I do this in pre-record? The answer is no, they would cut that out because that drives them nuts when I do crazy hyper things. So this proves that it's live. We're live right now.
Super live, yeah. Kennedy. We're glad you're in the gang.
All right, so the new book is, let's throw an image of this up on the screen because I want folks to pre-order this. There it is. Own Your Past, Change Your Future. It's only $20 if you pre-ordered today, coming out in April. What's launch day? What's the big day?
April 19th.
April 19th. But this is a deep dive. A deep dive not into just your personal story and your journey, but also a very prescriptive plan that I think most people can grab. It's not this crazy, oh, I have to be a neuroscientist to understand. And I think you really capture it in the title. Own Your Past, Change Your Future. What is the purpose of the book?
Well, can I tell you this, man? You hit it something on the head. I've spent the last two decades in working in universities and as a teacher. And man, there are some really great hearts there, some really committed professionals. And what they're trying to do for the world is noble and good. But what I found when I came to Ramsey is for the last 20 years, I've been talking over people, right? And sometimes I won't speak for my colleagues, speak for me. Talking about all the theories and all the stuff and all the neuroscience, the average guy who's just driving a truck, trying to make a little bit better living, trying to be a little bit better husband, to be a better dad, has no idea what I'm talking about, right? And so this book was really a book back to me as a reminder to simplify things down and make things where people can actually understand them and make their lives better. So this book, man, it's a decade in the making of the story of, man, we've been given two paths, Ken, either forget all of your feelings. Nothing matters. Just crush it, grind it, and keep moving, keep moving, keep moving. If you have feelings, it's really a character defect. Or the other one has been, how do you feel? What's your truth, Ken? You know what I mean? And all you will ever be is the worst thing that ever happened to you. All you will ever be is the worst thing you've ever done. You are going to have some sort of diagnosis, some sort of label, and that's all you'll ever be. And I think both of those are nonsense. And so this book is the new third way, which is you've got to own what happened to you. What your dad told you, what your uncle did to you, what that coach said to you, the abuse, the madness that you've endured, and then ask yourself that one challenging question, so what am I going to do now?
Yeah.
Right? And then it lays out, here's the way we can choose to live moving forward.
So when I see a title, Own Your Past, Change Your Future, how much of owning your past is related to diving into every different angle of it, or is it more, you know what, this happened to me, it had a profound effect on me, it will continue to have a profound effect on me if I don't get some healing from it. How much are we diving back in? Do we have to go relive it at a very graphic, unbelievably painful level? Does that change depending on what the pain is? Curious about that, you know?
Yeah, so what we've seen in the last 25 to 50 years in the trauma literature is that our body remembers. It's the way that if you were in a bad car wreck, I was in a car wreck recently. The next time I got back in a car and drove around that same curve, I tensed up.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Without even thinking about it.
Oh.
My body remembers that, right? If you had a home where dad drove up the driveway and your heart started beating fast and you knew, I better hide or I'm going to be invisible or I better make sure that I'm singing and dancing so that dad loves me, your body remembers that. So that when your husband drives up the driveway or your boss walks down the hallway, your body's like, oh, I remember this story. And if we don't do this right, we get hurt or we get fired or we get let go or we get disconnected. And so it's going back and reconnecting to your body. And I know that sounds so cheesy and woo-woo. It's all science-based, but it's finding those areas in your life where, oh, wait a minute, every time somebody says, hey, Delaney, I think you could do this better, I get pissed. I get angry. Why? Why was my body get enraged? How come when someone says, Delaney, you're wrong, why do I get all fired up about that? What is my body trying to protect me from? And usually, almost always, those have threads to last year, to 10 years ago, all the way back to when I was a little kid. And your body will remember until you bring it back online and you say, hey, I'm in control now. I'm good. So I can hear your feedback and your criticism and know he's not discounting me personally. He's giving me some important feedback and I'm going to take it and run with it, right? So to answer your question, it depends on the trauma. If you had some deep, deep abuse that you still are unable to have true connections, you may have to get with a professional and go pretty deep. Some of this stuff is, I'm going to train myself to stop getting worked up and fired up, and here's some ways we can do that. Yeah,
it's good stuff. The book is Own Your Past, Change Your Future. We'll tell you more about it where you can pre-order it, but it's easy. RamseySolutions.com. Go get it today. There's all kinds of goodies. We're coming back with your calls. Don't move. All right, folks, welcome back to the Ken Coleman Show. Dr. Don Deloney joins me in the studio. We're getting ready to take your calls, but we got a super chat from Michael, M-Y-K-O-L. Thanks for the $4.99 to the Ken Coleman Show. We won't spend it all
Michael,
in one place.
Michael, bringing it, brother.
We will budget that.
Hey,
Michael,
thanks,
thank
man.
You. So this is something that is a new concept to me. If you donate, you can basically buy your way in to the show with a super chat. So here we go.
I'm in for this.
Here's the question, John. We'll take it on together. Then we want to get to Keegan, who's holding on the line. Ken, is this a good time to switch jobs along with relocation for the job, given the uncertainty of the economy? I don't think the question is the right question. Is it a good time to switch jobs if it involves a relocation? That's where I would end the question. I want to address your fear here. The uncertainty of the economy, I don't think, has anything to do with what you're doing here. I think it has to do with relationships. Hey, you got to think about, is this a good job? Is it the right kind of job where, again, I want you to be in that sweet spot where you're using what you do best, talent, to do work you love, passion, to produce results that matter to you. If you're spending about 75% of your day doing that, and Michael, there's a ladder for you. It's a company known for developing and promoting people. All right, on paper, from a professional standpoint, John, that's a no-brainer. But this is where we talk about relocation. That becomes a personal relationship issue. Who are you leaving?
That's right.
How are they going to react? You shouldn't make a decision solely based on that, but because I would tell you to go do it if it's right. But if you're going to have some pain with the wife, the kiddos, are they in high school? There are some relationship issues. What would be a quick checklist where you'd go, it's still a good move, or maybe I'd hold off? John?
When you talk about moving and relocating, you're talking about a we proposition if you're in a relationship.
That's correct.
So we're moving together. And so if the job feels and looks great, but we, whatever that means, aren't able to move at this time, then it's not the right job. And I'll also throw this out there. Too many people give their nine-year-olds permission to decide whether the family's moving
thank
or not.
You. Thank you.
Get over that.
Yeah.
We don't let them buy cigarettes or beer or guns because they're 9 or 14 or 6.
Right.
They don't get a vote as to where we move.
And I'm going to add to that, Grandma Mabel and Mom and Daddy
aren't living my life. They're not paying my bills.
But if this is really tough on the teens, maybe because of where they're at in school, if your wife is really struggling, if you pull her or if your husband's struggling, you pull him, that's going to create relationship issues down the line to where the great job wears off in about a week.
If that.
Right. If that. And
yeah.
So that's what John and I are talking about. We're not talking about democracy vote here.
Right.
But we are talking about really from a spouse standpoint, that deep relationship. And if the kids are older, it's not the only job. And that's what I'm glad you said, Michael, it's not the only job. It needs to be right for you, the professional, and right for you personally. But thank you
Great question.
And so, hey, if you want to jump in on the super chat, I don't even know how you do it, but I'm sure you can figure it out. You just hit the dollar bill and
put
some money in the Ken Coleman Show account. And you better believe
you're first up. Keep this train moving down the track.
I'm telling you, man, I'm a preacher's kid. I can be bought. Let's be honest. All right, let's get to the phones. Keegan is on the line in Fort Recovery. Very cool place. I wish I was from Fort Recovery. If I want to go play right now with John, maybe we'll take some paintball guns and have fun in Fort Recovery.
I'm in.
Ohio.
What's up, Keegan?
Keegan, you're on the Ken Coleman Show.
Hey, Dr. John and Ken, it's a pleasure to speak with both of you.
You bet. What's up?
So I'm wondering, I guess at the end of the day, I'm wondering how much longer I should put up with my boss and one of the employees in my current situation. Just to give you some background, I've been with the company for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I am in the process of climbing up the ladder to get into management. My current boss is probably retiring in the 5-year range. We're in a shop of 4 guys. We work for a really big agriculture company, working across several plants, building and welding stuff for them. And me and another guy in the shop are climbing up the ladder to take over our boss's spot and then kind of split up to different locations. But the situation that's going on, so my boss, he has a hard time taking corrective actions towards one of the 4 employees that is breaking company policy. From what I've been told by the other guys that have been there longer, this has been going on for 4 or 5 years. He'll be good for a month or two, and then it'll just all go down the drain. I've been told in the last 2 years that he would take corrective actions personally by him 3 or 4 times. And I guess it's just getting old, and I'm wondering how much longer I should put up with this.
Long enough to find a replacement job. This is not going to get any better.
Nope.
I mean, this is a pattern now. this is not only a pattern that you've personally witnessed, but your coworkers have as well. You've taken it up the ladder to your leader. He's scared of something. He doesn't want to correct what needs to be corrected. And I would guess, John, that Keegan is already experiencing resentment, and that resentment isn't going to heal itself. So he's not going to change. Your resentment isn't, you're not going to be able to will yourself out of that resentment. Is that true, John?
Yeah. Once you get to resentment, your relationship's an ash at that point. It's almost impossible to come back from resentment, whether it's a marriage or whether it's a work relationship. Here's the thing, Keegan. It sounds like you've lost respect for your leader, and that's really hard to come back from. Like, I don't respect you as somebody who's in charge of my paycheck and telling me what to do every day. And brother, when you're there, I think the integrous thing to do is to find new work and head out.
Keegan, here's the $1 million question. In what you told us, it's 5 years before this guy leaves, and that's if he leaves in 5 years what he said he was going to do, which we know he has a problem with that. Can you put up with this? I want you to just think about this for a second. Don't even answer me quickly. I want you to process what you've been feeling this whole time. Could you put up with this leader for 5 more years?
I don't know. I guess it really is in my sweet spot. I've never had a job that
Hold
I enjoyed
on.
Being
Keegan,
there more.
Keegan, it's awesome. You are in the right role in the wrong place. Would you agree with that assessment?
In the right role under the wrong manager is what I would say.
Which means you're in the wrong place because the manager came with the gig. Here's my point. You redirected the question because you're a really nice guy. I'm going to say it again. I want you to answer quickly. Don't think about it. Answer it. Can you put up with this for 5 more years?
Probably not.
I think it's emphatically no. And my point is you don't have to. Here's why. This is not the only job in Fort Recovery, Ohio, or surrounding areas where you're in your sweet spot. Do you believe that? I'm okay if you don't believe me. I want to know if you believe that statement.
I'm going to have a hard time finding another fabrication job. Like, there's a lot of manufacturing jobs locally.
Yep.
But I get to go out and I get to hands-on discover the problems. I get to engineer them and use my creative thinking to solve the problem. And then I get to go back to the shop and build it and then manage a team of people
on the day of
install.
Yeah.
So, Keegan, let me flip this around.
Find too many places.
Let me flip this around, Keegan. Why do you care? You got your dream job in a town that you love. Let these two knuckleheads be knuckleheads and move on. What is it that's so bad?
I don't know. I guess I could just keep ignoring them. And like,
we've established that.
I've lost a little bit of respect for my boss that he won't take care of this. But at the same time, I'm in my sweet spot and he's flat out told me he wants me and this other guy to take over.
Yeah, but he's demonstrated that he's not a person of integrity.
All right, Keegan, since John flipped it on you, I'm going to flip it on you one more time. If I guaranteed you another gig in your sweet spot doing exactly what you so beautifully described a minute ago, which, by the way, isn't limited to fabricating work. What you described was very, very intelligent and articulate as to what you want to do. If I could guarantee you that tomorrow, would you leave this guy and the opportunity knowing that you could do what you love? Would you leave tomorrow?
If you could guarantee me it, yeah.
Yeah, so my point is, I'm not telling you to leave. I'm telling you to start looking. And let me throw another scenario at you while you're looking. How about you start doing some of this on the side? Maybe you start your own fabricating business here or there, project here or there, and 5 years from now, you're working for yourself. How does that thought hit you on the surface?
Well, I've actually already done that before. About a year ago, I started my own business.
On the side. No risk. We're going to grow slow. We're going to take our time. Here's the deal. You described on this call, I want you to go back and watch it on YouTube, all right? I want you to write down what you said. This is what I like doing during the day. Because if you do that, you start looking for that, you're going to find it. All right, here's the deal. We got to get out of here. For our listening audience, thanks for being with us. For our viewing audience, hang on, another bonus segment with Dr. John Deloney. This is The Ken Coleman Show.
Thanks for listening to The Ken Coleman Show. For more, you can find the show on demand wherever you listen to podcasts and watch the show on YouTube. You can also find Ken across all social media by following at Ken Coleman.
Hey folks, I want you to check out our other Ramsey Network podcasts like the Dr. John Deloney Show.
Hey good folks, this is John, host of the Dr. John Deloney Show. On this show, I talk to real people just like you who are wrestling through relationship issues, mental health challenges, annoying people. We're talking about anything and everything. I am here to walk with you, and it starts now.
Subscribe to the Dr. John Deloney Show wherever you listen to podcasts.